Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 17th, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Trump gives states permission to reopen as infections about to hit the Midwest. Meanwhile, yesterday saw a record 4,600 deaths in this country from COVID-19. Stimulus checks failed to reach up to 21 million people. And that small business paycheck protection act, it reached only 4% of the applicants. And now it's over. Dems' plan to defend Biden on China looks about as hapless as it could. In Michigan, a Betsy DeVos-backed group stages astroturfed protests. And new information shows that ex-Governor Schneider knew a lot more about the poisoning of water in Flint than he let on. Disgraced lawyer of disgraced President Donald Trump, Michael Cohen, to be released from prison over coronavirus fears. Polls show Americans think Trump acted too slowly in responding to this crisis. And lastly, congratulations. Coronavirus is not the only thing that we should be worried about. March 2020 was the second warmest on record on the planet in all the time we have taken such records. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I think I was remiss at the beginning of the show when I did not announce that Ben Dixon from the Benjamin Dixon program will be here with us. I hope you're well and your week is going well and you've been able to stay safe and relatively sane. My favorite meme I've seen this week, friend sent me, it was basically a cup of coffee handing off a baton to a glass of liquor. Every day, all day was the title. And I sort of feel like I'm beginning to settle into something like that. Have you guys been, Matt, Brendan is here. Have you guys been finding that you've been drinking more than normal? Or Matt, in your case?
I'm staying away from alcohol because that hurts your immune system. So I go with more natural remedies.
Right.
Well, this is a virus that attacks the lungs. So, I mean, I hope you're doing edibles for your own sake.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I'm drinking more. It's hard to tell.
Everybody's turned into a mom during this thing. But what do you
bought doing? A Mr. Coffee, though, and I'm drinking MR Blend.
I've gone through almost a half a bag of that 5-pound bag.
I didn't realize how expensive it was. I was trying to buy more, but I was like, I got to get that stimulus check first.
It's a 5-pound bag is, I mean, it's a lot of coffee.
It is a lot of coffee.
I hope you use the coupon code. Majority got 10% off.
You bet.
All right. Let's check. We're in the midst of the weirdness is just layered on the weirdness, and it's going to get more and more bizarre as this thing goes on. And we'll talk more about this with Ben, but the long story short is the Trump administration now seems hell-bent in coming up with a series of excuses and laying the predicate for blame to be shifted off of the Trump administration. So, and that is both on a medical and an economic, I guess, tracks, if you will. From the medical one, it is been to blame China and to claim that this is largely overblown and to attempt to, like, we're rolling out roxychloroquine. I am saying it. I'm not even going to try. Which, of course, the FDA, apparently there's a new story out saying that they relaxed their standards so much that they have gotten subpar quality and sent it around the country. Meanwhile, some people are saying that they're dying from cardiac arrest. I don't know. We haven't seen anything really from a reliable medical source yet on this. I imagine they're still working on it. And then on the economic side of things, Trump is setting it up in such a way that when the economy, when we start to realize the implications of having lost 22 million jobs, and I think we're headed towards 40 within the next couple of weeks, and this starts to catch up, the question is, you know, who's going to get the blame for this? Now, maybe it's not all one person's fault, but Trump is trying to shift it onto those governors of blue states by both saying, like, they won't open up their economies. And in some instances, and we're seeing this in Michigan, and we're seeing this in Kentucky and North Carolina and Ohio, there are varying degrees of AstroTurf protesting. Michigan, of course, is of huge importance to the election, and they are trying to make it seem like Whitmer is overreacting to this, less, I think, to get her to open up the state and more to shift blame onto her when people feel some economic deprivation later. And so things are getting rather bizarre. Here is Sean Hannity trying to project that we could go to a situation where everything could be more or less normal. And he's been working on this, and apparently he's come up with and this is a clip from his TV show. Apparently the radio show was even more nuts. He's come up with an idea in which we could all coexist at a baseball arena.
The game. Now, if I have the choice attending the game or not attending the game, I'm just speaking for myself. Consult your doctor. I'm not a doctor, but you must get the temperature.
He's not a doctor. He's not a health expert. But in the middle of a pandemic, he's going to float his plan to reopen Yankee Stadium and play ball. So consult your doctor. Go ahead.
Anyone that wants to attend a game. Now, if I have the choice attending the game or not attending the game, I'm just speaking for myself. Consult your doctor. I'm not a doctor. But you must get the temperature test to get into any Yankee Stadium. You get the temperature test. If you have a temperature, they give you information. You go to your doctor. Be safe at home. How to do contact tracing. No, can't have a database. Got to respect medical privacy, but you can't be if you have a temperature going into any even outdoor stadium. Now, temporarily, again, not the best conditions, but if it's my choice and I have to wear gloves, a mask, okay, I'll wear it. I'd rather go and wear it. If everyone else is wearing it, we can suck it up for a couple of months until things have passed. Probably can't eat popcorn because you have to keep your mask off the whole time, but you probably could eat a hot dog. You open up your respirator, take a bite, and you chew it under your mask. I have to drink my beer if I'm at a game. So if I have to use a straw and slip it in, I'll do that. whatever it takes to get my beer. I want to have a beer. Everyone's got to make their own decision. What is your appetite for any risk? You know, you get in a car, it's risk. You're going to have to decide, consult with your own doctor. I would rather have my temperature taken, drink beer from a straw, eat a hot dog by going like this and chewing it in a mass and not go at all. That's my decision. You make yours. Now, I'm pro-choice. I know this is not ideal, but if it's about saving the lives, especially of other people more vulnerable, and getting our economy back up and running full speed as quickly as possible, I'll suck it up. And I think a lot of New Yorkers would suck it up and want to go to the game, wear the mask and gloves. And maybe the Yankees and the Giants and Jets and Mets can make their own mask and hand them out as you go in with their emblems on it. I don't know. Just an idea.
Now, I have a question about this clip. Was this actually broadcast, or was he just high in the studio talking to some of the crew there, just like kicking stuff around? Do we know?
This was on. This was live.
This was actually, he broadcast this out to people.
Yeah, this was at 9:24 last night.
So I'm going to just apply, let's say, just, I don't know, 60 seconds of thought to this. So what he's suggesting is that everybody lines up. I don't know if you've ever been to a Yankees game or any baseball game. Apparently, he referred to it as a baseball arena on his, because he's got to have his beer. Well, so imagine everybody is jam packed in, waiting to get in line, or they're in line and they're going to go through the ticket thing. But of course, the ticket guy is going to have a temperature, a thermometer. He's going to take the temperature. And of course, there's a lot of these people because there's, I don't know how many people get into Yankee Stadium. What is it, like 40,000, the new one? I don't know. More, maybe. They're going to take the temperature of everybody. And for the, I don't know, like the 1,000 that are bound to have a temperature, or 500, or I don't know, 5,000, I don't know what. Those people are just going to walk around amongst everybody else with the temperature, because you don't want to have them come into the arena, as it were, because, you know, if they have a temperature, they could be infected. So instead, we'll just have them walk like, okay, you take my temperature. Oh, no, sorry, we can't let you in. Okay, I'm just going to walk back through this sea of people behind me complaining loudly. Like, God, I can't believe they're not letting me in because I have a temperature, and spittling all over people. And then presumably the Yankees are going to hand out all the latex gloves, right, and the proper masks that are going to help everybody. And they'll probably brand it, you know, Yankees, like you said, on the top there. And then who's going to police how everybody goes around and eats their hot dog? Like, one of the things that you really shouldn't do is have your mask halfway on, because then you're fumbling with it with your hands. And if the mask is doing its job and you happen to be infected, it's all on the inside of the mask. And so now it's all in your hands. Yeah, I'll take that hot dog. Thank you. Hey, you're doing a great job. I really appreciate it. Let me shake your hand. I mean,
don't forget some ketchup or mustard.
The ketchup and mustard. And then he's got to have his beer. He's got to have his beer. He's at the game. He needs his beer. When do you think the last time he went to a game where he wasn't in a skybox too? But it just occurred to me, he's just going to be in a skybox. He doesn't need to wear his mask and his, give me a break. Yeah. But the idea is, like, you got to be responsible and protect people around you. This is sheer insanity. It's sheer insanity. I don't know. I mean, he's just ruminating, I guess. And that's why it would have been fine if we had one of those satellite feeds where it picks it up in between the actual broadcast. And we played that. I'd be like, okay, that's fine. I mean, we always do stuff like that around the office. Talk about silly, insane stuff that we would never say on air. But apparently that's not what it was.
I mean, I miss sports too, but I just say bargaining is stage 3 of the Kubler-Ross grief cycle. And I don't think that sports are going to come back as soon as Sean wants them to.
No. And the thing is he keeps couching it. And it's like, we got to be responsible for other people. I think New Yorkers would be fine with the mask and the gloves. You know, this is actually a fascinating thing I learned this week. I'm not in Michigan, obviously, so I'm not at the protest. And this happened, I think, just before the protest. But I did a podcast for Politicon. They do they have their own podcast now. And it was something to the effect of like the name of the podcast, and people should, you know, check it out by all means. Can we just get along? I think it was. And on the show, where is this now? On the show is, how the heck are we going to get along? And it was Trey Aiken. Isn't he like some type of music guy or something?
Clay Aiken was on American Idol.
Okay.
Like way back.
Okay. Yeah. He was the host. I don't know. And the one guy was Glenn Jacobs. He is the mayor of Knox County. Apparently he's also a, I don't know, according to Brendan, he's a wrestler, or was in Tennessee. Ellie Mistel was on, and we recently had him out as a guest on this program. And then a woman named Alicia Krause, who is, I guess, a Daily Wire and a former Sean Hannity producer. And she lives in California now, I guess, but she's from Oklahoma. She's Noki. And the guy from Tennessee says, you know, we start like, you know, what's the big story this week? And the guy from Tennessee just starts saying that, like, well, everybody's talking about the abridgment of our First Amendment rights. And I'm like, what? And he's like, you know, this right to assemble is being inhibited by overreach. And I just, the idea that that is part of the story, that this guy perceives that as the main story that's going on, I think just shows the level of, I don't even know if you would call it the dislocation, and I don't even think it's necessarily polarization. This whole thing is fracturing the country even more. Now, I think he's going to have a different opinion on the abridgment of First Amendment rights when the virus hits Tennessee. And his constituents start seeing images of hospitals being overrun there because they only have two ICU beds. But I found it fascinating that there's a sort of like alternate narrative that's going on the right, which is, you know, we're being oppressed because we can't go out and catch this disease on our own. Go out, go catch the disease. These other people are not going to come out of, people are not going to go out to a Yankees game. It's going to be Sean Hannity sitting in a skybox looking down on empty seats as the team plays. He's out of his mind. He's out of his mind. All right, quick plugs and notices. Well, no, you know what? Let's go to Ben Dixon, and then we'll do the plugs and notices a little right after he's on. Do we have Ben? Can we bring him up? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, the proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show, Ben Dixon. Ben, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, Sam?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, man.
Do we have no image of Ben?
There we go.
Oh, there we go. There you go. Ben, welcome to the program. So, obviously, a lot to talk about today. We're basically following two different tracks on some level. It is the maybe three, the medical and economic implications of what's happening with coronavirus. And then, mm-hmm. you know, sort of this parallel track of the election. Yeah. But let's... let's jump in here. I don't know. Where should we start? Should we talk about the unemployment numbers that we had this week? We're now at 22 million. That was as of last week. We get
22 million
numbers.
as of yesterday. I think we had 5 million more become unemployed since the previous week. So we're at 22 million as of yesterday.
22 million, but that number is people who filed last week.
The week,
so
yes.
We don't know as of today how many people have filed. We won't know until next Thursday, but it's hard to imagine this number is going to get dramatically smaller because as time goes on, a lot of these businesses, you know, they just can't keep up. And we have the results now from this Paycheck Protection Act, and 95%, 95.4% of small businesses got zero.
Right.
It served only 1.4 million small business owners, 30 million small businesses, apparently, in the country. It's just a failure. And, you know, I was talking to someone who was worried. I mean, I'm worried about it too. You know, my kid's 529. It's not necessarily huge, but it's something. So I'm trying to save for their college.
Right.
And it occurred to me that there's really one or two ways this goes. It is one, the fact that the government was able to open the spigots for the Fed, $4 trillion props up essentially the stock market,
right?
Because these major corporations are all have a tremendous amount of money. Mm-hmm. They do nothing for everybody else and they don't care that it's completely untethered. And when we come out the other side of this, there's just going to be, it's an exaggeration, but the point being made, they're like, five big companies and, and that's it. And everybody else is just going to be basically, tapped for energy to as a life force to support those things. Right. And, you know, I just don't see any move to support like everything else that's happening.
Right. Right. I mean, it seems rather self-destructive. Okay, so the Fed obviously is propping up the markets, propping up corporations, the buyouts, the bailouts, rather. That's going on. But we have the participation, right, of the average consumer has dropped precipitously. Like, people can't go out and consume. And this is why we're seeing the layoffs that we're seeing. Like, we can't. That's why you see so many people on Fox News, on mainstream media, particularly Fox News, to be specific, begging for people to go back out, because there's so many other industries that were so dependent on people just going out and consuming every single day. And now we can't do that. So who's benefiting from that, obviously, is like online outlets like Amazon. And so I think you're right. We're going to see even more of a stratification in terms of the industries that are thriving, the monopolies that are thriving. And then the rest of us are just going to be here just simply trying to find bread to eat. But they have found a way to operate this economy without taking care of the people and just leaving us out here with the virus.
Right. It's all been financial help and not fiscal spending help, as it were. And I mean, I think I saw even there was a White House, like a restaurant, commission, and all the restaurants on it were chains.
Yes.
Like, you know, the idea of like independent restaurants are going to be, kaput. There's not going to be any help for these people.
Yeah. And so, again, this makes me beg the question, like, what are they doing here? Because it's not as though the solution that they're employing right now is sustainable in the long run. Right. This is not tenable in the long run. You can't have 22 million people be unemployed. And by the time this is over, I think estimates of upwards of 40 million be unemployed and have no path for them during this pandemic, let alone after the pandemic, and expect the system to not, you know, collapse and implode underneath its own stress. But that's the way they're operating. And mind you, it's really both parties are really, who's even talking about those 22 million people right now? Who's even talking about the fact that 9 million of them lost their health insurance? And that's just the individual. We're not even talking about the households that lost health insurance at the beginning of a pandemic. So I don't know if there is a strategy other than just grab all that they can right now with the bailouts.
I'm sort of shocked by the whole thing. And I think that it seems like it's unsustainable. I know that Khanna and Warren have come out with a plan that is not quite as generous as Sanders, but, you know, is getting some attention in terms of like providing, I think it was maybe, I don't know how much, $1,600 to $1,800 a month until the crisis abates.
Right.
And, you know, which is the only way to do this is you've got to have those sort of like automatic provisions.
Right.
Because if you don't benchmark it to sort of milestones that show that the economy is improving. In the event that a Democratic, the president ends up being a Democrat, the Republicans are just going to stand in the way of it. They're not going to allow for it. Yeah. But aside from that, you know, like this Cobra expansion thing is just absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah. It is like the desire to protect
right
the system exactly. as it stands now yeah. at all costs. And it's not cost borne. It's cost borne by people and maybe, you know, taxpayers. But
yeah.
the desire to maintain it is shocking.
It shows a level of commitment that even the Democrats have. Like, you know, I'm not really in the business of trying to draw equivalences between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, but this is one, right? Nancy Pelosi is proposing that we open up the coffers and basically subsidize the private insurance companies during a pandemic when the solution obviously is at some, even if it's a temporary Medicare for all solution, right? Whatever, it's not writing a big blank check to insurance companies to prop them up even more. I mean, the cost of Cobra is so exorbitant, man. I don't know if anyone in your audience, I'm sure somebody in your audience has tried to sign up for Cobra, and it's an insult to injury. Not only did you lose your job, but now your cost for healthcare is like obscenely high, like $1,800 a month, as if you could afford that even when you were working.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I do think that, like, you know, you could expand Medicaid. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't understand why they don't, the Democrats at least don't push it as an idea. Right. I mean, just from sheer politics, but you could expand Medicaid. And I guess theoretically, the Republican states could refuse to take it. Right. But that, you know, that's pretty clearly on them. I think they're afraid of doing it on a temporary basis because I think they're afraid that people are going to be like, hey, wait a second.
Yes, exactly. Why
can't we do this on a permanent basis?
Sam, I swear to God, I think that's what it is. Because listen, the things that we need to survive this pandemic, and mind you, like we've sheltered in place, and it looks like if we continue sheltering in place at the pace that we are, that we're going to flatten the curve enough to not have millions of people die. Right. But the way for us to successfully continue to suppress that curve, flatten that curve, is to give us things that will kind of awaken the body politic to be like, okay, wait a minute. The government could have been doing this all along. You mean I could have had insurance without it being tied to my employer all along? You mean they could write us a check and we could have a universal basic income so that we're not starving in between jobs all along? And I think, honestly, their behavior pattern suggests that they are more terrified of the body politic being awakened to what we could potentially really do in this country. They're more terrified of that than millions of people potentially dying. As you can see, they're pushing. I mean, even Joe Biden's language on Twitter earlier this week, talking about in the New York, I forgot where he wrote his op-ed in. I think it was the New York Times. But, you know, talking about reopening America. And of course, he laid out some guidelines for it. But just that language at this juncture, when we're nowhere near the point where we can safely reopen the country, it just suggests to me that they are more willing to risk lives than they are risking America really realizing what we can do as a society.
Yeah, I think that they are so desperately afraid of offering anything.
Right.
Because there is a desperate desire to sit on the sidelines through this entire fiasco and election.
And it's even like to argue a point that you kind of alluded to there. It's bad politics. If the Democrats really wanted to win, they have a couple of slam dunks at their disposal right now, right? Of course, the Senate is not going to approve any of these things, right? But that's how you play politics. Like, put it on the table. Show the people that you're actually fighting for them. Let Republicans turn it down. Let them not pass it. Let Mitch McConnell not even bring it up and go on every single network talking about it nonstop. But instead, the Speaker of the House is going on The Late Show talking about her ice cream.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is a belief, and I, you know, I feel like I'm repeating myself now ad nauseum, but I think there is a belief, and I imagine in different people who share this belief, it is driven, it is more or less ideological as well, that, you know, you don't give this guy any rope. Well, or you give him plenty of rope to hang himself, but you do not make this election about choosing between two things. Mm. Right. I mean, and you make it about voting against a referendum on Donald Trump. And if we offer anything, I mean, it's so bizarre. I mean, because the idea is that we can offer expansion of COBRA, right? Like you say, $1,800 a person, I mean, over $24,000 for a family of three or four over the course of a year.
Mm-hmm.
For us to pay that money as a society is just an enormous, we're writing an enormous check.
Right.
It's just huge. And we're giving it all to, we're building nothing with it. We're building nothing with
right.
it. We're not building any type of system. We're not doing anything. We're just giving it to insurance companies and they're going to, you know, their profits will be just sort of, you know, enormous. And, but nobody will complain about that. They will not get attacked
right.
from the right about that. And they won't get attacked by as many quarters and they won't get attacked by big money because they're paying off the insurance companies.
Right, right.
Whereas they could do something that is far more rational by any stretch of the imagination, which is we're automatically putting people on Medicaid. If you've lost your job,
right.
all you need to do is fill out one box. Don't right. have employer health care anymore. Boom, you're on Medicaid mm-hmm. and you are Medicaid eligible. And if the state won't cover you, then I don't know what you can do at that point. If you're the federal government, maybe there's another mechanism to do it. But the Medicaid could happen right away.
Yeah,
and it would be cheaper.
Yes.
But I think that they're afraid of being accused of being socialists in the middle of this, and it is ridiculous. The whole attitude. Joe Biden conceded the other day that I can't win Donald Trump's base. Who cares? They're 45% of the country.
Right.
Do the
right.
math.
Right.
Do the math.
Yeah. No. So it's a level of commitment to an ideology. I agree with you on that because I think they firmly believe these things and they don't want to risk from the Democratic side. They don't want to risk being seen as socialist or anything of that nature. But the funny thing about it is they may very well get outflanked from the left from somebody like Donald Trump, who will seize the opportunity to say, OK, well, even if it's just some type of temporary fix, even if he floats it and the House goes against it, which they never will, because then what would they look like, you know, turning down something like a temporary Medicare for all or like you said, a Medicaid expansion just for the pandemic? Like if Donald Trump has no ideological center other than his self-aggrandizement. So it's a good possibility that he, like writing his name on the check, right? It doesn't mean anything philosophically other than it's going to be a check in the hands of the people that now they feel like they got directly from Donald Trump. It's smart politics. And at this point, the Democratic Party, not only are they not doing what's in the best interest for humanity, they're not doing what's in the best interest for their own self-preservation. And people are getting paid good money to give them bad advice. I mean, the consulting class is really raking up right now and they're really going to help Joe Biden lose his election.
That to me seems like the best job you could possibly have in this environment. Like you just
fail
sit at home,
yeah.
give you, you know, basically do what you and I do, provide commentary, mm-hmm. But then also get some type of like commission on ad buys.
Obscene commission. I mean, the state ad buys for a Senate race is into the millions of dollars. Imagine what they're doing on this presidential race. And then the commercials, like, I mean, I'm sorry, you just kind of kicked in my consultant hit, Brian. The commercials coming from Joe Biden's camp. It's going to be a long general election. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, it is. And what I'm also interested in is what's going on now with these protests. Michigan is the biggest one. And that is the most obvious. The explanation for that is the most obvious, right? I mean, there's multiple things going on there. There's a racial dynamic, a huge yeah. racial dynamic in Michigan between, you know, sort of the rural and suburbs and then the cities. That's a big part of it. I think another big part of it, and we should talk about this in a moment, is Whitmer, as I think on, you know,
mm-hmm.
the short or medium sized list to become a vice presidential pick. Michigan, right. of course, one of three states that is were the swing states in 2016. And Wisconsin right now, if I'm the Republicans, I'm a little worried about Wisconsin because I tried to get everybody killed to get a Supreme Court seat that I couldn't get.
Right.
Although that same Supreme Court Justice Kelly has said that he's going to stay, you know, that he is willing now to sit in on a case that he recused himself from, right, from 6 months ago, which will essentially purge 200,000 people from the voter rolls in Wisconsin. So Michigan is a key battleground state. Betsy DeVos funded organization, some like Tea Party type of thing, right, is staging these astroturfed protests, saying that Whitmer is, you know, shutting down and ruining Michigan by protecting people from the coronavirus. And clearly that is an attempt to win Michigan, right? Right. And they're doing these protests. We're seeing them in Kentucky. Mitch McConnell needs them bad. And there's a Democratic governor there. We're seeing them in Ohio, which is a little bit surprising. But DeWine was very closed it down very quickly. He's reopening it. And I'm not quite sure. I don't have a theory about Ohio, but certainly North Carolina, they're protesting the Democratic governor there. And Tom Tillis is in big trouble. What's your sense of these protests and how where, you know, where it's all going?
I mean, it's very strategically laid out, right? This is their extension of politics, and this is their way of weakening the. This is their way of generating some fury that's countering the fury that's being presented towards, right, Donald Trump, right? They have to find a way to stir the animus because, quite rightfully so, everyone should be infuriated by how Donald Trump is handling this. And so the push is to say, okay, it really wasn't as bad as everyone thinks it was. We really can go back to work. And it may not have been a hoax, right? But it really was just a hysteria. And so this is an extension of that. And quite honestly, it's exactly what Republicans need to latch onto to not become disillusioned with the fact that the president of the United States has put so many people's lives at risk. So it's really a smart play. I mean, we think of Republicans as being dumb because their arguments are sometimes so bereft of any substance that you really question if they have any intelligence at all. But they're very astute in their political machinations. They know what they're doing.
Well, I mean, this just reminds me of the Tea Party movement. It reminds me of even like the Brooks Brothers mob,
exactly,
in Florida.
Like, oh yeah,
you got all these, you know, John Roberts is one of those guys. I like to remind people, all these guys in suits, you know, protesting and creating the sense of anger. And right, they know that if they can show the anger is on more on one side.
Yes.
And or make it appear that the anger is more on one side. Yeah. Then it changes the nature of the conversation. I don't think that's happening in the mainstream, but it is, I think, in many respects, a way of making sure that they deliver their base at the very least.
Right.
And hope they get lucky.
Right. And that's what they really need. Right. So, I mean, there's so many things that are happening. November is going to be totally different than I think anyone is really considering in the Democratic establishment. Right. Because chances are we won't have this pandemic completely under control in November, where people are going to go out and vote in numbers that are comparable to any other year. Right. The depression, the suppression of the vote is going to be significant if we don't get mail-in ballots secured across the country. That's number one. I know Kamala Harris is working on that, but we don't see a full court press
that
from the entire.
That has to be a completely non-negotiable part,
right,
of when the House approaches phase four of the stimulus. It's just, you can say, like, we're not showing up otherwise.
Right. I mean, it absolutely has to be. But we don't see that unified press building up from the powerful people in the Democratic Party. And again, I really... Mm-hmm. I'm kind of thrown off because I don't know what their strategy is if it's not to just lose, right? It has to be their strategy is to lose, because every decision that they're making up to this point is doing that. Because here's how it plays out. If we don't secure mail-in ballots, then it really only is going to take the smallest portion of Donald Trump's base to win, because who's going to go out in the middle of a pandemic when chances are you could, a couple of people say on the Democratic side, oh, I'll put on a hazmat suit. Sounds cute. They'll crawl through glass. That sounds cute. But the majority of people will not risk their lives to go participate in a political system that doesn't care about them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't see any indication that the Democrats are serious about this. I mean, one of the things that Nancy Pelosi has done has been specifically not develop an apparatus for people to be able to vote. And right, it's just doing unanimous consent. I guess they do that on some type of group phone call or something. I don't know how that happens. But and it is concerning because it is a way of basically making everybody give them cover to vote for a bad bill.
Right.
And it doesn't, it just decreases accountability. We don't know who's voting for it and who's not.
Yeah.
And people can talk about it afterwards or they can talk about it before, but there's really, it doesn't even matter. Yeah. Unanimous consent. All in favor. Aye. The ayes carry. Boom. I mean, that's it. It's over. And so it's highly, highly problematic. And all right, let's just pivot to who you think. Joe Biden's talking about developing a cabinet, and there are organizations out there. I think there are organizations out there that are starting to push to make sure that certain people aren't picked, which is good. And like so much of this process, on some level, Obama taught activists and people on the outside the implications of who is on the transition team. And, you know, like it was Froman who was ended up being the trade guy who did push PPP. But Froman was from Citigroup, and he is the one who basically helped staff the Obama administration and Citigroup did. And in this instance, I think people are smarter about it and they're paying attention. There are organizations that are doing it. Maybe we should have somebody on, you know, like Jeff Hauser over at the Open Door Initiative that comes out of EPI. He's doing stuff like this. I imagine there's a lot of these organizations. You know, everybody pays attention to the VP. That's going to be particularly important this time around because of Joe Biden's durability, let's say. But what's your sense of what's happening?
Yeah, I think, okay, so you're absolutely right. What we went through with Barack Obama, that's when I realized Barack Obama wasn't who we thought he was, right? As soon as we saw that, we didn't find out until after the fact that Citigroup was doing all the vetting, but you could see it in real time when Timothy
was
Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel and then Timothy Geithner for me. When I saw Timothy Geithner, I said, okay, I see what the game was the whole time. But I don't, we'll see how effective it is, right? Because I think we have in Joe Biden, and particularly the people who surround him, I think we have people who believe that they are above the backlash of activists and of people on the ground, of these organizations. I feel like they honestly believe that they can stick it to us and stick anyone in those positions that they want to. The jury is out on that. We'll see. Like I said, I don't know how this election plays out because the coronavirus and the backdrop really changes the dynamics of everything. But I do know the people, some of the people that are around Joe Biden, and I just don't think they give a damn what any activist groups have to say about it. And I think that they should tread carefully because I think the last thing that they need to do, in addition to alienating Bernie Sanders supporters, is to alienate people who otherwise would find a way to convince themselves to support Joe Biden. But particularly like in the, you know, watching the VP race, I think he has some landmines there that that's really, I think it's a no-win situation for him on that one, because there's so many people pulling really hard for Kamala Harris and Stacey Abrams. I don't think Georgia is a swing state yet. I think it's almost a swing state, but it's not one yet. California is definitely not a swing state. And so that really does put Klobuchar and Whitmer particularly in play. But that backfires spectacularly because a lot of the African-American support for Joe Biden was based on the idea that there will be an African-American or a woman of color VP pick.
And not to mention, you know, Whitmer and Klobuchar are on that, in terms of that list, are on the right side of that list.
Yes, yes, very much so.
Harris, yeah. You know, I don't consider Harris, you know, on the left in any way, but I also don't think that there is that she's really established any type of
right
like in a politics, frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she's sort of an open book. That's not necessarily a positive. It's just I don't think that she really has any politics other than, you know, she was a cop for a while and you know, acted like one, but, and Stacey Abrams for that matter, I don't think is really frankly as progressive as, you know, people have this assumption she is. But again, also not so easy, you know, to glean when she was running in Georgia. I'm with you on this. I don't know. And Elizabeth Warren's name is really being pushed right now as well.
Mm-hmm.
I am of the mind that he needs to pick a, I mean, he's already said he's going to pick a woman. I'm of the mind he needs to pick a woman of color.
Yes. And I think politically speaking, right? Like if you want to do some, you're going to lose. Joe Biden is going to have a problem with the black vote anyway. Right. Hillary Clinton had a problem with it. If Joe Biden does not pick a black woman, a woman of color, then there's going to be a lot of people who turn on him. And even if they don't actively turn and work against them, they won't be motivated to go out and support him. So he's got some landmines to navigate. I have my daughter here who is insisting on my attention. But go ahead. Continue. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I just got a text from my daughter. Who told me, who was trying to explain to me why I heard all this screaming, because my daughter at this between the hours of 10:30 and noon is in charge of my son. And that's, this is all part of it now.
Yeah, so. This is part of our new world, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, do you have a sense of who he's going to pick?
No, actually, and I'm sorry, Sam, I don't know if I want to give them good advice either. Like, you know, you guys pick Joe Biden. I mean, let it all fall the way it's going to fall. I mean, I think conventional Democratic consulting is going to say either Klobuchar or Whitmer. Right. And good luck with that.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, look, first of all, the political science says there's no evidence that vice presidents win, you know, help in their home states anymore.
Right.
And you know, all you need to do is point to 2016, right? I mean, you know, Tim Kaine was supposed to deliver Virginia. He didn't, right?
I can't recall, but I knew, I think there's, whether or not they help, they certainly hurt. Tim Kaine certainly hurt the ticket, especially when it came to the debates, when it came to just his position, his I don't have a better word for it right now than the lack of swagger. He was a cornball, and he really brought down the ticket ideologically as well. Like, he just was not an ideological addition to Hillary Clinton. But that's the type of thinking that goes in play with these Democratic consultants who honestly are getting paid tens of millions into the hundreds of millions of dollars combined to give bad advice. So I think people are really pulling for Kamala Harris on Twitter, but the Democratic consulting class are really about to sandbag them with someone who's going to help him lose.
Right. Clinton did win Virginia, and I think it was actually by about 5 points. But I don't know that that's attributable to Tim Kaine. Right. I think the idea is that she was trying to signal, like, I'm good in the suburbs,
right,
with Tim Kaine. I don't know. I don't envy him having to make that pick. I mean, I guess the obvious one is Harris, and I would imagine that's the way he's going to go. But I'm not terribly thrilled about that. I mean, I think from a political, you know, from the actual politics, I would rather have a Warren as VP, because at the very least, there's going to be some conduit to getting more left voices in there, arguably.
I think a Hail Mary would be like Barbara Lee. Someone floated that on Twitter today, and I thought about it.
I mean, frankly, yeah. Elizabeth Warren, I think, is too old too, because she and ever herself is too old, but like I think that when you add up the ages of the two nominees of the ticket, it really should not 120.
You know, I did not realize Barbara Lee was that old. Like, I met Barbara her in person. Lee,
yes. Are you kidding? No way.
But she looks, she doesn't, I mean, that's just kind of the benefit of our, anyway, but I would have put her in her 60s. I definitely wouldn't put her at 73, but you're right. That's got to age
you
out.
You just
right?
can't do it. I just don't think you can do it. And you know, for a while I was thinking like Ayanna Pressley. I don't know that she has the experience the gravitas at this point in her career, but
I think she has the career gravitas, maybe not, but just gravitas in general. I mean, she's a hard hitter. I think she can handle the debate. She can handle herself. She can comport herself. I actually hadn't even considered that. That's actually.
I mean, I haven't heard anybody ever float her name, but it just occurs to me that, like, you know, she endorsed Warren, so you'd bring that along. She's a member of the squad, so you would get that sort of cachet. I don't know.
I mean, she's not particularly viewed as the most progressive.
No, she's not.
But at this point, like I said, they don't give a damn about the. I don't think they honestly care about the progressive movement, and I don't think that's a smart move. But so that may just be kind of a Hail Mary that could salvage. But then again, like if you have to think in terms of a conventional Democratic consultant, they would be screaming at anyone suggesting Ayanna Pressley because she's from Massachusetts, which is not a swing state. So everyone is saying you got to get someone from a swing state, which, you know, maybe. But this is a whole different ballgame. This 2020 is different than any other year. And I don't think that they're making those calculations. I think the protests that we're seeing strategically in across the these states is probably going to be more impactful than a swing state VP pick.
Right.
Simply because of the coronavirus.
Yeah, I agree with that. What's your take on the I don't want to get into this conversation, but your take on those that we've seen in Twitter anyways, who claim they will not be voting for Joe Biden because he doesn't,
you know,
he's not,
you know, honestly,
Bernie Sanders policies.
I've done this now. This is my second campaign doing politics, you know, as a podcaster, right? So I was in the first wave in 2016. You get demoralized, right? It's very aggravating. The games, the bitterness. So I understand anyone who's at this point who's like, I'm not going to vote at all. I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden. I get it. And I think the most important thing for them is to, you know, if you ever want to stand a chance of convincing them otherwise, take a step back and let them breathe, you know? Don't try to like do like Mehdi Hasan did, which was like attack them the very same day Bernie Sanders dropped out. You have these people with huge platforms attacking people who are demoralized. I mean, people flew across the country on their own dime to canvas for Bernie Sanders. You got to give these people space to like vent and let them make the decisions for themselves. And then once they see that you respect them enough to give them space to vent, then maybe you can convince them otherwise. Of course, Donald Trump is worse than Joe Biden. Even if you just look at the coronavirus, do not think that I know without a doubt, Joe Biden administration would not have handled the coronavirus this way. And there would be probably thousands of people still alive. So I think things like that matter. I'm in Georgia, so it doesn't really matter what I'm going to do so much because I don't think we're a swing state yet. But I think we do need to give the Bernie supporters as much time as they need because they demanded we give Elizabeth Warren the time that she needed to make up her mind Barack Obama made up his mind.
Right, exactly. I mean, I'm with you on this. I think it's very early. I mean, this is not 2016, and you know, we're months away from the convention not happening, essentially.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe it being a
Zoom convention,
like a Zoom convention. So I'm with you on that. I think that we've got plenty of time to talk about that, and I'm not terribly worried about it, frankly, to be honest with you. I think the bottom line is that there are people who are going to be wanting to come out and vote against Donald Trump. And if that's not enough to carry,
On the flip side of what you're saying, though, I don't think that they need to be worried about Bernie supporters who are disillusioned. That's a percentage that maybe they could ignore. I'm not going to say they can.
Right.
It's a risk. But who they can ignore are all these people who are newly unemployed, right? Who just got a stimulus check, and then some of them are going to get a physical check. Or didn't get a check, right? So they're in a bad spot and they don't believe either party is going to help them at all. But if they did get a check and they're going to get a physical check, it's going to be a check with Donald Trump's signature on it. Like, I think that's much more significant in terms of how this is going to play out in November than whether or not Bernie supporters are angry or falling in line.
I agree. Let me just ask you, you're from Georgia. What is your opinion of Stacey Abrams?
You're asking me all the questions that are going to get me in trouble. I think Stacey is an accomplished politician. I think that I kind of admire the fact that she's unabashed with her ambition. Like most of the time when you ask somebody if they're running for office, they'll be like, oh no, you know, I'm just focusing on my job. Not Stacey Abrams. She was like, yeah, I'll run for president one day. That's refreshing. I don't know that I'm an absolute fan of it, but it is different. I think again, she's an effective politician, and whether or not she's progressive or not, I mean, what is progressive? You know, we dig down into it. I'm really filibustering here. That's all I have to say about Stacey Abrams.
There's a lot of ambition there. I mean, I don't know if I've run into somebody who's like not less than like twice removed from going to a house party that she put together at one point somewhere or something like that. I mean, it's a bit of exaggeration, but yeah. I mean, I think.
I would vote if she ran for governor. Like I voted for her against Kemp. So obviously I would vote for her in against any Republican on any given day. And so that's it. There you go.
Right. I mean, that is. And also, you know, in the context of Georgia, your expectations can't be as great as they would be if you're in California.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah,
that's
exactly.
Just, that's just the fact. I mean, I think like, you know, this that's just a fact.
Yeah, the politics, obviously, like the machinations that she would have to go through in Georgia is going to be uniquely different than what Kamala would go through in California. We would hope that we could, you know, kind of have some standard expectations. But, you know, I think that's a good context to put it in, Sam, and I'm going to use that one going forward.
All right. Lastly, I'm just getting this across the transom. Maybe we can have Matt pop this up on the screen. You can check this out. We were talking about these protests that are going around the country that are funded by Betsy DeVos and I'm sure others, but certainly the DeVos, you know, foundation. It is a group called, and this is, you know, we had 3,000 people supposedly that showed up on Wednesday, a bunch of Proud Boys as well who were blocking traffic.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Michigan Freedom Fund is a nonprofit funded by the DeVos family. They are and also were along with a Michigan Conservative Coalition. There's a lot of like paramilitary type of and quasi paramilitary and near paramilitary groups in Michigan. Michigan is just in many respects unto its own in terms of like what's happening out in the rural areas there. And on Twitter, here it is. Brendan, can you pop up this? Donald Trump is retweeting all of these hashtags, liberate Michigan, liberate all these different states. It's obviously a concerted effort to change the subject and to, you know, and here's the thing. It's like, this is the problem. Ben, and here it is, liberate Minnesota. They're going after the states. Liberate Virginia. Liberate Michigan. They're going after the states that are perceived as like possible swing states.
Yeah.
And what's stunning about this is that and I would imagine on some level what the dynamic is that they know the governor there is not irresponsible enough to open things up for the sake of placating this. And so they do it anyways, specifically because of that. Because otherwise, like, we're just repeating what he did at the beginning of this. Now epidemiologists are showing models that suggest that had we shut down everything a week or two earlier, like 50,000 people's lives would have been saved.
And
that denial that he had at the beginning that was just motivated by a fear of having a bad economy under his watch.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, do we still have people in the country who are still genuinely believing this that are in positions of power, or are they just like massaging it for political reasons?
That's a good question. Do they really believe this, whether they believe it or not, I think they're willing to risk it actually happening, right? They're not going to go on television and constantly advocate for us to open things up unless they're willing to take the gamble that it would. I think I saw some polling out that there's a very small minority of even Republicans who think that it's time to actually go back in public and quote unquote reopen America. And so I think the ultimate result of this is really just going to be political, rallying the base, agitating a few people while giving some of their base. There's a portion of Donald Trump's base that knows that this is bullshit, right? And they know that this is dangerous and we don't need to do it, but they also need something to latch on to help them advocate for Trump, or rather advocate against like these governors. And so I think if nothing else, they're just giving them some cover, something for them to latch on to while the rest of the country goes through this pandemic. Because otherwise it would be all hands on deck against Donald Trump, because the people who are dead, you know, like you really can't overstate this. Donald Trump is responsible for quite a few people being not just Donald Trump. I mean, Cuomo, for that matter. You know, there's a lot of leaders who, had they made better decisions, people would be alive right now. And I mean, every person who died has an entire family who feels that. And so I think that's a political calculation in itself. And the way that they have to rally their base around that is these liberation campaigns that and it's really smart politics. I can't stress enough, Republicans are playing smart ball with, even if you think Donald Trump is a moron, he is leveraging his power in a significant way.
And I think part of what they're doing is setting a predicate for, you know, when people start to feel the economic crash.
Yeah.
Because right now, I think everybody's just sort of at home and there's this sense of like, well, maybe help is on the way. Mm. And I think we're, you know, people, obviously a tremendous amount of people are stressed. They've lost their jobs.
Yeah.
But in terms of like, and we're seeing all these layoffs, in terms of like, you know, I still feel like we're in a state of shock on some level, and we're disoriented. Mm. And
I don't think it's reached all of us either. I think there's those of us who are comfortably at home.
Without a doubt. I think that's absolutely true. And I think it's, you know, it's harder to tell that the deprivation is there until you start going out and seeing like, oh, there's, you know, what is attributable to a lack of economic activity and what is attributable to like everybody staying home because of the coronavirus.
Yeah.
I think we're still collectively in a state of shock where the country does not realize, like, you know, it's like, oh, I had no idea. I just lost a limb and I'm going around. Yeah. Right. And I honestly feel like that's part of it. But so they're setting a predicate that they're hoping later they can draw on. And when people are looking around going like, what happened to our economy?
Yeah.
But this is interesting. Politico reporting that the mayor of Grand Island, Nebraska, is asking for a statewide stay-at-home order that the governor there insists is not needed. More than one third of those tested for coronavirus in the surrounding county of Grand Island are positive. It's the fourth biggest city in Nebraska. Nebraska, incidentally, has also gotten like $397,000 per coronavirus case.
Jesus Christ.
That number is going to go down as the number of cases goes up. But there are new cases in Iowa, in South Dakota, in Nebraska. It's starting to spike. Grand Island, I think, has like, a couple of ICU beds. This could hit there in the next week. Matt's saying that South Dakota is getting smashed. Like, in a week from now, when people in South Dakota and people in Nebraska are, and Kowalski called in, one of our regular calls called in and said, like, it's starting to build. In a week from now, when they're watching the local news, and they're starting to hear that people are dying and they're starting to see pictures coming out of this hospital, this could all change dramatically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how many, you know, Twitter liberate whatever Donald Trump puts out there. This could change dramatically. And then I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I think part of us feels like I'm hoping for the best. Right. I'm hoping that we did flatten that curve. But, you know, I think lingering in the backdrop is the fact that this still could get a whole lot worse.
Yep.
In fact, with the stuff that they're advocating for, it's going to cause it to get a whole lot worse. So I'd like to think that we were getting past the eye of the storm, but maybe we just have been comfortably sitting in it.
here's the thing, and I am trying to, you know, not be a downer. And I think I have a natural tendency to be a downer in every context, not just on this program, to say. But once we flatten the curve, that's all well and good. But all that means is that we're not going to have hospitals that are overrun, that the trickle, that the, it's not going to be a trickle, but the flow of infections is going to remain constant and under our capacity to deal with it. But our, but that's presuming we maintain where we're at.
Right.
Unless there's some other external factor that enters into the picture and changes the equation. And the only thing that can be is testing, is widespread testing.
Right.
And without that, I don't see how we, if we, you know, flatten the curve, then we go out in a week.
Right.
How we're not right back here with the exact same problem of trying to flatten the curve again within, I don't know, 6 to 10 weeks, maybe less, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. And, no, I mean, part of flattening, we're either in this for the long run until we actually get a vaccine, or we're just going to be in a vicious cycle. And I think, like we started the conversation off at the top, right? There is a way for us to be in this for the long run that is sustainable for individuals and is sustainable for some type of economy, right? It's unfortunate. The solution will still make Jeff Bezos really rich, right? Yeah. You know, putting a universal basic income into the hands of people to consume from home is going to make Comcast really rich because we're going to be watching all the movies that they have.
But that's true. But if there is enough money that is given to support small businesses, okay, then at the and to maintain people, you know, pay people to basically work at home, even if they can't do their jobs.
Yeah.
Pay companies to keep their people at home.
Yeah.
So that these businesses can exist afterwards.
Exactly.
Because what's happening, and I keep using this metaphor, and because it works, we're all under a yellow flag, except for this small group of businesses and financial institutions that basically, you know, are getting fueled up and they're speeding around the racetrack. And when we're done with this, they're going to have lapped the rest of society in such a way that we will never, ever to catch up and create some type of parity. And so to the extent that we have this income inequality and wealth inequality and power inequality and political inequality that existed prior to this, it's going to be exponentially worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Ben?
Sam.
Stay safe.
Do the
say
same,
hi to your kids, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you
all
so
right
much.
Take care, man. Thanks.
Folks
for having
can
me.
Find your show on what is it, patreon.com
/ the BPD show, or they just follow me on Twitter. I tweet out the link quite often. At Benjamin P. Dixon.
All right. Thanks so take much care, man. I really appreciate thanks, it man. Folks got to support shows like Ben's. Very important going through this, and I don't mean to be a downer. I try not to be, but I think it's my disposition. I don't know. Are you guys laughing?
It's also the calling, I feel like.
It's the what?
It's the calling. How can you not be a downer? It'd be weird to not be a downer these days.
Right. I mean, you would have to really sort of not be paying attention. I mean, that's what really struck me by that Politicon thing. And I should say, I haven't heard it. I lost power in the middle of it. Just like I was sitting here talking, and all of a sudden, like all the lights went off and it is super dark. And there was nowhere for me to go or do. There was nothing for me to do about it. And
that's going
to
be in the biopic.
Yeah. I tried to email them, and then eventually I got on, and I was, you know, I got on, and the way I like to approach these things is when I'm talking to conservatives is I start off nice. And so I had missed my whole transition period of when I start getting less nice. And so as soon as they had me on, I just started to rant. And within like 10 seconds, I was already saying like, well, with all due respect to the mayor, And, you know, because they're sitting there going like, you know, the number one story is this abridgment of our First Amendment rights. And it's like, what? Are you out of your mind? And it's a, it's very convenient for them to say this because they are, you know, not being subject to, the massive amount of death and anxiety and concern, that is, you know, happening all around us now, in this part of the country, but it will eventually get there, I think. All right. Let me do the plugs and notices because I got a quick one. And then what we'll do is we'll take some phone calls and maybe head into the fun half of the program. Just a couple of... I have two today. One is from Matthew Film Guy. Didn't have him on this week, so I figured we'd do a little bit of a plug. He writes, my film appreciation class at the Central Queens JCC, now called Common Point Queens, is going online, and thus I can open it up to anyone with the technology to join. If any Majority Report listeners would like to join me and about a dozen other dedicated cinema lovers for a film discussion for 6 Tuesdays starting next week, $10 a class for non-members, anyone can sign up at this link. It's at commonpointqueens.org. And then you look for the cultural arts and Jewish heritage classes. We'll put the link in our description. It's a film discussion group with film critic Matthew Weiss.
Do you have to be Jewish? One of the tribes?
It wouldn't hurt. No, you don't have to be Jewish. You don't have to be Jewish at all. I can tell you, I don't think Matthew Weiss has ever celebrated Jewish holiday, as far as I've known, as long as I've known him. But it's film discussion group with film critic Matthew Weiss. It is 6 Tuesdays in the afternoon, $48 for a member, $60 for non-member. Links to films will be available the Friday before. So check that out. We'll put a link in the podcast description and the other. And if you are in Brooklyn, a farm kitchen. I'm not sure what the name of it. Thai Farm Kitchen in Brooklyn is delivering free meals to those in need during this time. Good for them. ThaiFarmKitchen.com. Thai. FarmKitchen.com is where you can get information on free meals if you need it in Brooklyn. In the South Brooklyn area, I think it is. So let's take a quick break. We're going to head into the fun half of the program. I will take your phone calls. We've got a lot of sound to get to today. Just a reminder, folks, this program relies, and do we have Jamie? Jamie will hop on too. This program relies on you, its members, for its support and its existence. We are obviously... like everyone, frankly, going through this sort of total cratering of ad revenue. I can't quite tell if there's less ads. There may be, but apparently the CPMs for these things are significantly less. It's a Friday. We didn't have any ads from our podcast broker. I don't know how that works, if they have already paid for those ads in advance, but the ads that we anticipate usually coming in haven't come in. We will be here. We are committed to being here, every day, but, and again, we were able to, send out a bunch of, comps to people who need comps. If you're one of those people who have you've lost your job or you anticipate a financial problem and you've been a member, head over, go through the cancellation process. We have a system automatically hooked up, to hook you up. If you're someone who wants a membership but can't afford it, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And if you're one of those people who can and you've always been thinking about joining, now's a great time to do so, because you're not only, you know, making up for ad revenue for us, you're also helping out other people to get the show, and it's much appreciated. Also, check out the AM Quickie. he had an advertiser lined up. Another one. I don't know what's going to happen with that. There may be one other that we found who can just, you know, offset some of the costs of it. A lot of this is going to be treading water for a while. And check out the amquickie.com and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. Matt, who was on TMBS this week?
We had Paul O'Connell and Slavo Žižek on, and Žižek had his laptop on his lap and a pillow behind him. It was a very interesting interview, so people might be interested in that.
He had his pillow behind him?
Žižek was very comfortable. It's kind of interesting. I think James Darwin said it looked very interesting on 2x speed. Because his laptop moved as he was talking into it. But it was a great interview. I mean, I liked both times we've had Žižek on. And then last night we had Adolf Reed on to talk about some third party issues, but not in the way that we typically do. And then Medina Touré on to talk about NYC health in crisis. So those two bonus streams on the TMBS YouTube last night.
So check those out. Maybe it was because it's Passover. He's doing the pillow. Probably not, but
no.
Passover is now ended, incidentally. Also, check out the Noma Key Show. You can find it at youtube.com, the Noma Key Show. She's putting out videos every day, I think it looks like, or maybe every other day, more or less. Check that out. She's got a bunch of great guests and doing some commentary. Nobody gets into the mechanics of what's going on with the Democratic Party like Noma Key does. Noma Key. I don't know why I have such a problem with it. It's not just her name. It's just that her name is... It's for so long I called her Noma Key. And then I found out that I was pronouncing it wrong. And then it's very hard for me to unlearn that. Check out the Antifada. Jamie's on this week. Find it at patreon.com/theAntifada. And a literary hangover. And plus, I'm hearing great things about the Twitch stream.
Yeah,
Matt.
twitch.tv/literary hangover. I was triumphant in two overtimes over David Griscom a couple nights ago. And thanks to that positive experience, I fully embraced the Twitch lifestyle. So go subscribe at twitch.tv/literary hangover. I'm going to be playing some Doom, playing some Red Dead Redemption, doing a lot of things. So go subscribe to that, folks.
All right, quick break, fun half. See you then.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Grandpa.
My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some
of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.